This is a great day, not the least of which because today is Christ the King Sunday. Christ the King Sunday is the last Sunday of the church year, and it is a time to be celebrated. It's finally when, think about the church year beginning. It begins with Advent as we prepare for the coming of Jesus. And when the wise men show up, we get the first hint that this isn't just any old baby that's being born. That you have kings from afar coming and bending their knee and bowing down before Jesus and recognizing his kingship. So at the very beginning, you have this hint that this is a very special child. And then as the whole church year develops, it develops and fills in, and we begin to see Jesus getting more authority and receiving more authority. And finally, even you have, even when he is enthroned, and unfortunately, because of sin, he's enthroned upon a cross and takes it away. But you have the whole movement of the church really revolves around his kingship. And on this Sunday, we finally get to the point where we recognize his lordship over everything. But in the Christian faith, there's always that yet and the not yet, that which we recognize and yet that which we wait for. And so we, even in the Eucharistic prayer, wait for that time when he shall put all things in subjection under his feet. And that's going to happen. That's going to happen, but it hasn't quite happened yet, even though he has conquered death and has conquered sin upon the cross. But to have everything and every knee bow before him, that's out there in the future yet, and we're still waiting for that. But today we recognize it, and we recognize that it's coming. But we have a problem here in America. We have a problem with kings. And it goes back to our founding when we had a king, old King George in England, and we were to be his loyal subjects. And King George was far away, and he tried to tell us to do things, tax us heavily, taxation without representation. He saw us as a cash cow, and we rebelled against him. And all the rebellion against the king with the Boston Tea Party and of course, the whole Revolutionary War, ultimately, which established America as a free country, set up with a system, very interestingly, as we look then for somebody to lead us, there's a great fear. Oh, no, we can't have George Washington. He'll become a king. And so it's in our bones that we resent kingship. A human being supposedly divinely ordained by God and empowered by God, we in America just rebel against that because we know and we understand that power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so when we hear about Christ the King, it's really hard for Americans to shift gears and get all excited about all this power, all power, eternal power, resting in the hands of one individual, perhaps even if it's Jesus. And yet that's exactly what we're looking at today. And so it's fascinating to look at the lessons. There is a recognition, and all you have to do, this is the beauty of the whole Old Testament, and all the book of Kings and all the book of Chronicles and the history of all the kings that ruled over God's people. As you read through that, how many of those kings said, and they did right in the eyes of the Lord? And how many of them said, and they did evil in the eyes of the Lord? Let's be honest. There's only about five that said, and they did right in the eyes of the Lord. But even them, the best of the best was David. And I don't need to go into the details of David's life, but David even failed. And he gave in to that power resting in a human being. And so there's this great tension as we in America recognize power, too much power in the hands of a human being is not a good thing. That's why we have a system of government that spreads out power through three branches and also allows each individual in the country to vote. So that we spread things out, and we spread things out among the states, trying to take away all that power resting in one individual. And we just resist it. And as Christians, we resist all that power of kings as we look to the history of the kings of Israel. There's one place in Scripture that really addresses this, and it addresses it in a lovely way, and that's Jeremiah. And it's Jeremiah chapter 23. And I want you to understand here, it begins to talk about shepherds. But shepherds are the image that the Bible uses for kings. And you'll see that explicitly in the passage here. But here it is, the frustration of the prophet Jeremiah with the kings of Israel. And he says, "Woe unto the shepherds! Woe unto the kings! Who destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, declares the Lord." And it gets down, and he's got an answer for it. The God in heaven looks down, and he sees these earthly kings, even some of the best of them, and yet even under David, his sin causes civil war with Absalom and all kinds of problems. And he looks down, and he's just dismayed over these earthly kings that he has entrusted the sheep of his pasture to. That's an important phrase. Remember that and hold on to that. And he says, here's my answer. "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch." He's fulfilling his promise that he made to David, that your descendant from your line shall sit upon the throne forever. He keeps his promises. Even though David blew it, he still keeps his promises. And so a descendant of David will be raised up, and he shall reign as king. And he shall deal wisely, and he shall execute justice and righteousness. And in his days, Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell secure. And this is the name by which he shall be called: the Lord is our righteousness. The Lord shall be the king. So it shall be a man, a human being, a descendant of David in the line of David, and yet somehow this human being shall also be the Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, shall be God. How does that happen? Well, there's the mystery of the incarnation, that the king that God raises up is at once fully man, descended blood-wise from the line of David, but also fully God and eternal with the Father forever. So he's radically different than just a regular human being. We get a hint of that at the wonderful lesson that we have from the Old Testament today. And that was, this is apocalyptic, the lesson from Daniel. And I highly recommend, don't be scared of the book of Revelation, but before you read it, read the book of Daniel and read the book of Ezekiel. You get so many hints throughout Daniel and Ezekiel as to what's going on in Revelation. But one of the biggest hints comes in the lesson today. And there's some really important things that happen in that lesson that I want you to grab a hold of. One of them is this, is that God is going to send one after the beast is finally destroyed, the Antichrist is destroyed, thrown into the lake of fire. He raises up this king, and this king shall come in the clouds, and he shall be called, and here's the fascinating thing, it says right here in Daniel, he shall be called the Son of Man, a descendant of man, human being. It's fascinating, this title, Son of Man, that is the favorite title that Jesus Christ uses for himself. When he refers to himself throughout the Scriptures, if you look in the Gospels, he doesn't call himself the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, even though he is. He calls himself over and over again the Son of Man. This king, descended from David, fully human, a Son of Man, yet also fully God. This unique kingly figure. And it points out, too, that this king, and this is why I love the passage from Jeremiah, this king descended from David, he will be a king like David. And David was raised up to be king while he was first a shepherd. I love the phrase, when they bring out all the sons of Jesse and they parade them in front of Samuel, and Samuel says, isn't there anybody else, even though Eliab was there and Aminadab, and they're all big and tall and handsome and powerful. And Samuel says, nah, don't you have any more sons? here's the line. Well, yes, but there's only David, and he's the youngest, and he's out taking care of the sheep. That is prophetic. It's not just that he was out in the fields taking care of the sheep, but it's prophetic in that that's exactly the kind, that was the characteristic that God is looking for the righteous king. That it's not about his power, but he uses any strength and power he has to take care of the sheep. And then we get finally to Jesus, who comes online. And in John's gospel, you have the wonderful passage. Yes, it talks about his kingship. This is the King of Kings. But it talks about Jesus as also being the good shepherd. The good shepherd. It all kind of comes together, once again, this shepherd king that we deal with. In one of the royal psalms, we have one of the royal psalms today, which is Psalm 93, that talks about the eternal nature of the reign of the king. But then I love to look at Psalm 95. Psalm 95, it's what we call the Venite. If we were still doing morning prayer and evening prayer regularly in church, we'd be using the Venite all the time. Hopefully you're doing that at home. At any rate, there's this little snippet out of the Venite, one of the royal enthronement psalms, and it goes like this. For the Lord is a great God and a great king above all gods, referring to, obviously, in the end, Jesus. Let us come and worship and bow down. And let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God, and here's the phrase, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. In this little few verses, that theme that the King of Kings is also the shepherd who watches over God's people and takes care of them, it all comes together right here. So what are the implications of this? Well, I love it. Psalm 95 lays it out. We don't like kings because of their power, and yet here's the truth. What do you do when you come before a king? Get your Christmas cards out. Get the pictures of the wise men. What do they do when they come before this baby laying in the manger who's recognized as the king? They fall down on their knees. And here it has right here in the psalm also, let us worship and bow down, and let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. And so all through history, when somebody comes into the presence of royalty, into the presence of a king, certainly in England you bow, and there's a very formal way that you do that, and they'll tell you how to do that so that you don't blow it when you come before the king. But typically when you come before a king, you kneel. The technical term for that is called bending the knee. And I always, in my mind, I always had a picture of this leg that was laying on a table with a little sign that pointed to it, the knee, and said, this is the knee. And I have some little gesture picking it up and going like this. But that's not what's happening with bending the knee. Bending the knee is what you do before a king. What are you saying in bending the knee? It's also what you would do in worship is you bend the knee. So part of bending the knee involves worship. But the big part of bending the knee is saying, I am humbling myself before you. I am seeking to live as your subject, which sub means under. I am seeking to live under your rule and under your authority. So when you come before a king and you kneel before them, you are humbling yourself and saying, I am your subject, loyal subject, I am your servant, I will live under your authority and your rules. That's what I do for you. But it's also understood then that being under that authority, the king's job is to protect you. That's his end of the bargain. Why do I make this fuss about bending the knee? Well, we're going to bend the knee a couple times here this morning. When people are confirmed, they come before their bishop, and they're going to bend their knee. They're going to kneel before the bishop. Now, I want you to understand This is not bending the knee for Keith Andrews, even though he's bishop. He is sitting in, and this chair that he's sitting in is described in the book that we just read, in the book of Daniel, the Ancient of Days sitting upon the great throne in heaven. He is a stand-in for the Father. Has nothing to do with the human being, Keith, but he's standing in for God, and you're kneeling before him and asking that the Holy Spirit will consecrate you and set you apart and empower you for ministry. And it's not Keith that's doing that. It's actually God working through his hands, dating back to the time of the apostles, but you are kneeling and submitting to it, and you're submitting then to the will of Christ in your life. You're saying, Christ is my Lord. Christ is my King. And I'm kneeling before my King. Best image of what happens in confirmation, once again, go back to the Middle Ages, have a king on his throne, and a knight comes to him, and a knight is going to give an oath saying, I will serve you my entire life, and he gets down on and bends the knee before his king, and the king knights him with his sword. Keith's not going to do that with his big stick. The symbol of that, in some traditions, some bishops will tap you on the cheek. And that goes back to that knighting with the sword. You are being commissioned, not by Keith, but by God the Father. And so you're kneeling and submitting to the authority of the King of Kings, Jesus, and coming under his authority. We also kneel in worship as we come forward, and this is the beauty of today. It's going to be the first day we're going to be able to kneel to receive communion. And we're kneeling in worship and adoration before the King in remembering his death and sacrifice in the sacrament of his body and blood as we receive that kneeling, thanking him, praising him, worshiping for what he's done for us. And then finally, the image that comes together for me too, as we are the sheep of his pasture. So what does that mean? Well, he's the good shepherd. And what it means is that we who gather together as the church, coming before the good shepherd, the King of Kings, in the line of David, the shepherd boy king, the 23rd Psalm should ring in your ears. We need to be people who are not anxious about what we will wear or what we will eat, because the shepherd is watching over us. Not anxious about our future, because he promises in the 23rd, yea, even though I come into the presence of my enemies, thou preparest a table before me, and my cup shall overflow. You shall lead me in my life beside streams of still water and green pastures, and I shall dwell in your house forever. How can you read the 23rd Psalm and not be overcome with the power of the shepherd who is placed over us as his sheep? And this power is not a power like earthly power that tends to gather more power and make people worship you. This is a power that's all focused on the sheep. The feeding of them, the protecting of them, the saving of them, the ability to give them the ability to dwell with the shepherd and God the Father forever. So this Sunday, Christ the King Sunday, I think what we've got to do is remember the great shepherd king. Come before his throne with thanksgiving and honor and fall on our knees, even as Americans. We've got a king, and he is good. We've got a king who loves us and is a good shepherd and will take care of us. The bottom line is this, is it wasn't just Americans who don't like to bend the knee. Israel didn't like to bend the knee either. That's why it said they had stiff necks. Well, they had stiff knees also. And so to end up, you've got here a warning in Psalm 95. After it says, let us come and worship him and bow down. But it says, today, if you hear the voice of the king, do not harden your hearts. Do not stiffen your necks. Do not stiffen your knees. As in the day of Massa and Meribah in the wilderness, when your fathers put me to the test, they put me to the proof, even though they had seen my work. And I had to say that these are people who go astray in their heart, and they do not know my ways. And therefore, this people shall not enter my rest. I want you to realize the day is coming when we're going to stand before the Shepherd King. All of us, even those with stiff necks and stiff knees and hard hearts, every human being will one day stand before the throne and stand before the Shepherd King who laid down his life for us. And at that point in time, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess. On that day, I pray that we are numbered among the sheep who bow the knee in thanksgiving and joy and worship, happy to bow before the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And God forbid that we would be counted among the goats with the stiff necks and stiff knees, because their end is not well. Oh, that we will be among those sheep who will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.